That's Susan Graham singing a song called Sonnet by Ned Roram. Time magazine has called Roram the world's best composer of art songs. In 1976, he won the Pulitzer Prize for his suite Air Music, and he's taught for years at the Curtis Institute. Thanks to his career longevity and his distinguished body of work, Roram is known as one of the preeminent composers at work today. He just turned 80.
Nobody thinks of themselves as getting old or dying, and when we try to imagine it, we really imagine ourselves as survivors observing all of this. However, I would rather be depressed, which I am, and appreciated than depressed and forgotten. And there's been a lot of fuss about it, so I feel good about that.
Do you have advice for young people who, in these days, still want to write classical music for a living?
No, there's no rules. It's so-called classical music, which isn't quite the term, but to write serious concert music in this day and age, when even cultured intellectuals don't know what it is. So we're not a despised minority, because in order to be despised, you have to exist. And yet there are a couple of hundred in America, young composers, who they have to make their own rules. There are no rules. I have no advice except get to know the right people and don't be afraid. There's no room, there's no place for it, I should say. On the other hand, of course, there is. There's always been a place for it. The thing is that people feel that it has to have a big audience, and I don't know why. Why can't an audience of 200 people at a song recital be the right audience? So, no, I don't have advice, but I wish they'd give me some.
Do you think that the status of classical music has changed since you began composing?
Yes. We're the only period in history ever in which the performer is more important than what he's performing. In other words, a violinist like Isaac Perlman, who lives across the street from me, by the way, and has a very loud air conditioner, he makes in one evening what I make in a year. And he does so by playing exclusively music of the past, Beethoven and Mendelssohn and so forth. And that's never happened before. In the past, the performer and the composer were usually the same person, Chopin, Liszt, Rachmaninoff, Beethoven. But now they're two different people, and the performer is in it. And because money comes through playing standard classics, the living composer is not, except for pop music, is not a viable entity.
Was that true, do you think, ever in earlier centuries? I remember reading about Joachim, who commissioned works.
Brahms, yeah.
Yeah.
No, in previous centuries, the music that was played was the music of the time. Mendelssohn rediscovered Bach, but Bach had been forgotten, and then Mendelssohn revived him. But in Beethoven was a great big star. He was like Frank Sinatra. So were Chopin, so were all of those performers, and others whose names we've forgotten. But at least they did the music of their time, and usually their own music.
I guess what we're really talking about is whether modern audiences believe in serious music. Is classical music something that still matters?
They believe in it, but they only believe in it in music of the past. In other words, if an all-Beethoven concert will always fill the halls, but even Debussy and Ravel are people walk out, and they have the audience is not a cultured to the music of its own time. This, by the way, is strictly with music, not with the other arts. The same audience knows all about, they might know Vivaldi, but they don't know the equivalent of Vivaldi today, like me and my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. But they know Dante, and they know Philip Roth, and they know Giotto, and they spend a lot of money on contemporary painting, like Jackson Pollock. It's only in music that this has happened.
What's different, do you think? Because, as you say, modern art seems to have found a place. And
everything has to do with money. It's the same in schools. There are no courses today in the fine arts because that's not going to make money. So kids aren't given music appreciation courses. They don't even learn Shakespeare, but they certainly don't learn contemporary literature. They're learned to how to make money. Everything is money, money, money.
What about dance? Dance seems to have remained in the public consciousness, and I'm not aware of people making a lot of money at dance.
Well, incidentally, dance criticism in the New York Times, you'll read a long article on a new ballet without one mention of who the composer was. Really, and that's, of course, what interests me most, is this on new music, is on commissioned music. Composers, in my youth, I wrote a lot of music for dance, as well as background music for theater, for new plays. But there is not much writing by composers for the dance today, and of course there's no money in that either, so you do it for love. Merce Cunningham revives his John Cage ballets mainly, or he'll use rock music, something of that sort. But there is no aesthetic or premise about music in modern dance. Modern dance has a certain cachet, I guess. I never go to dance recitals, but that's just me.
Do you think, when you think about the music that you've written and the music that your brothers and sisters, as you call them, are writing, do you think that there is a future for classical music?
Nobody knows the future. And people ask me as though I would know better than you or anybody else. I don't know the future. If the future existed, it wouldn't be the future. However, I take a dim view. I feel that we're all going to go up in smoke in the next 10 years anyway. And if we don't, we'll be one big, happy, vulgar, low-class family eating at McDonald's in Afghanistan. But then, again, that's my future. I think something else, anything could happen. If Mrs. Bush decided to give a big party for really high-class musicians, the way the Johnsons did in 1965, as the White House goes, so goes the country. Things could change just overnight, the way Mrs. Kennedy made things. Even under very right-wing Republicans like Nixon, money went toward the arts as much as it went toward a lot of other things, too. And that could change, but I don't think it will. And it's the same in every country in the world, not just America. France, for example, where I lived for many, many years, doesn't have any music going on that I know about, or painting, or writing, even bad writing. If it does, I haven't heard about it. The same is true of Germany, of Italy, of Japan, too. And these countries are all comparatively prosperous now.
Are you able to get your music played now?
It's not for me to get it played. It's for my publisher, too, and sometimes. A lot of it's been played just in the past few months because of my birthday. But I have great big pieces for chorus and orchestra and soloists that never get played once. People want world premieres, and then they never get played again. I don't know who gets played really a great deal except Philip Glass.
But you were once not played, I guess, but sung quite often. You were widely known as
Yeah, but people don't give song recitals anymore. I feel that... Do you know the Susan Graham record of mine? Came out about a year ago. It's entirely my songs. There's 35 songs. It's Susan Graham, who has the best voice and the biggest reputation of American mezzo-sopranos, did it. And she kind of is beginning to revive song recitals. American singers can't sing in their own language. We still have an inferiority complex about singing in English. But my songs get done as much as anybody else's, and partly nobody else writes songs.
Do you think there's a problem with the popularity of those, well, I suppose you could call them greatest hits from the past? People do love to listen to the Vivaldi Four Seasons and the Ode to Joy from Beethoven's Ninth.
But how long can that go on? It just, if you look at the Sunday Times, of, it's just Beethoven, Beethoven, over and over and over again. And when singers sing recitals, American singers, in every language except their own, it's just the same old Schubert. It's exasperating and sort of hopeless situation. I mean, there are other people besides Vivaldi and Beethoven, and they're living today. I find it's a very, very dreary situation.
In the history of music, a lot of it was composed due to commissions. Some of the stars these days do seem to commission works. Mm-hmm. Does that happen much now,
Not much,
do you think?
No.
So what happens to the music when the commissions dry up?
Well, I haven't written a piece without a commission for 40 years, but it's not commissions by superstars. It's commissioned by, I just finished a flute concerto, which was commissioned by the first flutist at the Philadelphia Orchestra, and he got them to pay for it. I just wrote a cello concerto for a Estonian cellist named Geringes, and he's playing it all over Europe. So I get commissioned, but it's not commissioned by superstars in themselves. It's people who want the music.
What do you think orchestras, composers, performers need to do to, well, not to put too grand a point on it, to save classical music?
Well, Michael Tilson Thomas in California, in San Francisco, has made it into a major symphony. He's also an American, and most of our big symphonies have European conductors who couldn't care less about American music. Well, Tilson Thomas began his whole season with a rather big piece of mine, the very first piece on the first concert. He also does what Bernstein used to do, is he talks to the audience. I think that's a very good idea, and tells them, this is your music. It's not from Europe. It's from your music and your metabolism and your blood. It's, so listen to it, and I'll tell you a little bit about how it's made. I think to include the audience is to include the socially, so to speak, is a good idea.
Do you still get the same thrill from hearing your music performed that you did in earlier times?
No. Well, what makes you think I was? Like I was thrilled earlier times. No, I don't. And I've heard a lot of, just 2 days ago, there was a concert of my music. There have been many. And I hear pieces I haven't heard for ages, and it's very interesting. But people say, how does it, what do you hear when you hear this music? Well, nobody knows what other people hear when they hear music, but one of these pieces, my second string quartet, I had heard in about 50 years, and I heard then the landscape of Morocco where I was living. It all came back to me as I was living there when I wrote this piece. So what I heard was a visual recollection of where I was, who I was seeing, and obviously nobody but myself can hear that in the music. So I'll get a sort of a nostalgic thrill. Sometimes I'll listen to a piece and say, gee, I wish I could do that good now, early songs. And I'll listen to it as to another composer and say, gee, he knows what he's doing. And I'll admire the craft that goes into a piece.
Ned Roram is a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer and memoirist. He lives in New York City.